وَخَلَقَ اللَّهُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ بِالْحَقِّ وَلِتُجْزَى كُلُّ نَفْسٍ بِمَا كَسَبَتْ وَهُمْ لَا يُظْلَمُونَ.
Allah created the heavens and the earth in truth, that each person may be requited for his deeds. They shall not be wronged. Allah created the heavens and the earth in truth. God has not created the heavens and the earth as a sport. Rather, their creation is animated by perfect wisdom and a sense of purpose. It is therefore inconceivable that the upright and the wicked will be reduced to dust after death, and that there will be no afterlife in which they will be recompensed proportionate to their good and bad deeds. Those who properly utilize the faculties and resources bestowed upon them by God in doing good should be rewarded. On the contrary, those who misused these and perpetrated mischief must be punished. That each person may be requited for his deeds. They shall not be wronged. The meaning of this verse is quite clear in the present context. If the upright are not rewarded for their good conduct, and the wrongdoers are not punished for their wrongs, and if the wrongs of the victims are not redressed, this would amount to injustice. Such injustice is out of the question with regard to God's realm. Likewise, the other form of injustice is that an upright person is rewarded less than what he deserves, or a wicked person is punished more than what his wickedness warrants. This is also inconceivable with regard to God.
أَفَرَأَيْتَ مَنِ اتَّخَذَ إِلَٰهَهُ هَوَاهُ وَأَضَلَّهُ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ عِلْمٍ وَخَتَمَ عَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِ وَقَلْبِهِ وَخَتَمَ عَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِ وَقَلْبِهِ وَجَعَلَ عَلَىٰ بَصَرِهِ غِشَاوَةً فَمَنْ يَهْدِيهِ مِنْ بَعْدِ اللَّهِ أَفَلَا تَذَكَّرُونَ.
Did you ever consider the case of him who took his desire as his God, and then Allah caused him to go astray despite knowledge, and sealed his hearing and his heart, and cast a veil over his sight? Who after Allah can direct him to the right way? Will you not take heed? Did you ever consider the case of him who took his desire as his God? To take one's desires as one's God means that one fully becomes the slave of one's desires. Such a person does whatever yields pleasure, irrespective of the fact that it is forbidden by God. Likewise, he will not do what is prescribed by God as an obligatory duty if he doesn't want to do it. If someone behaves as described above, he is the servant of his unbridled desires, no matter whether he verbally calls them his God or not, and whether he worships them as idols or not. This because such an attitude amounts to treating his desires as deities. In the case of such behavior, one cannot deny committing idolatry on the technical grounds that one had not verbally declared any of one's desires to be one's Lord, or that one had not literally prostrated before them. This is how distinguished Quranic scholars have understood this verse. In the words of Ibn Jarir al-Tabari, this person has made his base self his deity. He does all that his base self asks for. In so doing, he fails to observe the limits of the lawful and the unlawful laid down by God. According to Abu Bakr al-Jassas, such a person obeys the promptings of his base self so religiously as one should serve God. Zamakhshari offers the following interpretation. He is led by his base self and follows it blindly. In other words, he looks after his self with a devotion that one consecrates to God. And then Allah caused him to go astray despite knowledge. This is open to more than one meaning. It may mean that notwithstanding that person's knowledge, God directed him to error, for he was a slave of his own desires. Or it might mean that in view of God's knowledge, that one deifies one's desires, God pushes him into error and misguidance. And sealed his hearing and his heart, and cast a veil over his sight. God's causing some people to go astray, and his sealing of their hearing and his casting a veil over their sight has been explained by us. For details, see Al-Baqarah 2, note 10 and 16, Towards Understanding the Quran, volume 1, pages 48 to 9, 51, Al-An'am 6, Note 17 and 28, Volume 2, pages 223 to 4. 231, Al-Araf 7, Note 80 to 1, Volume 3, page 62. Al-Tawbah 9, Note 89, Volume 3, page 239. Yunus 10, Note 71, Volume 4, pages 53 to 4. Al-Rad 13, Note 44, Volume 4, pages 239 to 40. Ibrahim 14, Note 40, Volume 4, page 270. Al-Nahl 16, 107 to 8. Banu Israel 17, Note 51, Towards Understanding the Quran, Volume 5, pages 47 to 8. Al-Rum 30, Note 84, Volume 8, page 116. Fatir 35, Note 16 to 17, Volume 9, pages 212 to 14, and Al-Mu'min 40, Note 54 above. Who, after Allah, can direct him to the right way? Will you not take heed?
It becomes evident from the context of the verse that those who are bent on unbridled gratification of their desires are none else than those that deny the hereafter. Such people look upon the idea of the hereafter as so many shackles and fetters upon their freedom. Once they deny the hereafter, they become even more engrossed in gratifying their desires and wander about in error, committing all conceivable misdeeds. They feel no scruples in usurping what belongs to others. Since they are given to committing injustices and excesses, even the fear of the law does not deter them from evil doing. They also tend to disregard the incidents that should serve as lessons for them. Lost in self-complacency, they feel satisfied with their conduct, even when it is evil. They pay no heed to any admonition. An argument that generally dissuades people from doing evil is misconstrued by them as an incentive for committing further evil. They look for any pretext to justify their unbridled freedom. As a result, rather than being concerned with doing good, their hearts and minds are given wholly to the gratification of desire. This proves beyond any shadow of doubt that denial of the hereafter is fatal for morality. What can restrain and keep man under control is his belief in accountability to God for his deeds. Even a learned person who is devoid of this consciousness is apt to behave like a brute.
وقالوا ما هي إلا حياتنا الدنيا نموت ونحيا وما يهلكنا إلا الدهر وما لهم بذلك من علم إن هم إلا يظنون.
They say, there is no life other than our present worldly life. Herein we live and we die. And it is only the passage of time that destroys us. Yet the fact is that they know nothing about this and are only conjecturing. They say, there is no life other than our present worldly life. Herein we live and we die. And it is only the passage of time that destroys us. Yet the fact is that they know nothing about this and are only conjecturing.
The unbelievers do not have any definite source of knowledge that categorically informs them that there is no afterlife. Likewise, they are not on sure ground in holding that the human soul is not seized by God's command, and that man simply dies in the course of time. These ideas are simply their speculations. They may at most claim that they do not know whether there is an afterlife or not. However, they have no grounds to rule it out categorically. By the same token, they cannot claim with certainty that the human soul is not seized by God and that man dies as a result of a mechanical process. Since both options exist, the unbelievers are not justified in dismissing one altogether and insisting only on the other. In fact, in so doing, they are swayed by their own biases. Far from basing their view on any weighty argument, it is their desire that there should not be any afterlife. In other words, it is their wishful thinking which prompts them to deny the reality of the hereafter.
وَإِذَا تُتْلَى عَلَيْهِمْ آيَاتُنَا بَيِّنَاتٍ مَا كَانَ حُجَّتَهُمْ إِلَّا أَنْ قَالُوا ائْتُوا بِآبَائِنَا إِن كُنْتُمْ صَادِقِينَ.
And when our clear signs are rehearsed to them, their only contention is, "Bring back to us our fathers if you are truthful." And when our clear signs are rehearsed to them,
that is, those signs which provide weighty arguments in support of the hereafter, these prove that both justice and common sense demand that there should be an afterlife, for in its absence the present order loses its meaning.
Their only contention is, "Bring back to us our fathers if you are truthful."
The unbelievers refuse to believe in resurrection. They insisted that the hereafter can be affirmed only if they see with their own eyes the dead rising from their graves. If this did not happen, they were not prepared to believe in resurrection. However, the fact remains that they were never told that the dead will rise from their graves in this world. Rather, the Quranic doctrine is that it is on the Day of Judgment that God will resurrect all mankind and recompense them.
قُلِ اللَّهُ يُحْيِيكُمْ ثُمَّ يُمِيتُكُمْ ثُمَّ يَجْمَعُكُمْ إِلَى يَوْمِ الْقِيَامَةِ لَا رَيْبَ فِيهِ وَلَكِنَّ أَكْثَرَ النَّاسِ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ
Tell them, O Prophet, it is Allah who gives you life and then causes you to die. And He it is who will then bring all of you together on the day of resurrection, a day regarding which there can be no doubt. Yet most people do not know. Tell them, O Prophet, it is Allah who gives you life and then causes you to die.
This is a rejoinder to their fallacious notion that the death of humans is caused simply by the passage of time. They're told that life and death are not a chance happening. It is God who grants life to people, and it is He who seizes their soul.
And He it is who will then bring all of you together on the day of resurrection, a day regarding which there can be no doubt.
This is said in response to the demand to resurrect their ancestors. It is pointed out that it is not a few individuals who will be brought back to life. Rather, on the Day of Judgment, all humans will be resurrected.
Yet most people do not know.
Their ignorance and myopic vision account for their denial of the hereafter. This doctrine is neither novel nor bizarre. On the contrary, its absence is unthinkable. Anyone who studies the workings of the universe and his own existence will realize that the hereafter is imminent.